Welcome to Crossroads, the Infrastructure Podcast. This is your host, Andrew Vitelli, Senior Editor of Energy in the Americas for InfraLogic. Thank you for tuning in today. Our guest today is Jonah Goldman, Head of External Affairs and Impact for Generate Capital. And in that position, Jonah is focused on regulatory and policy engagement. Jonah, thank you for coming on to the pod.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Andrew. I'm happy to be here.
So we are recording this on January 21st, the day after President Trump's inauguration. And we planned it like that because Jonah is very focused on the impact of policy and regulation on the energy industry. What I didn't expect was that just 24 hours into his presidency, President Trump would have already made such an impact and so much news when it comes to the energy sector, including issuing a spate of executive orders, one of them declaring a national energy emergency, several others. And we're going to get into all of that today. But before we dive in, Jonah, can you tell me a little bit about Generate Capital?
Absolutely. We think of ourselves as the capital partner for the infrastructure transition. And what that means to us is we feel like the transition is going to be built asset by asset, and we are deeply focused on assets. And in that, we do three things. We build, own, and operate projects, so actual projects that are delivering clean energy to people around the country. And then we also build, own, and invest in companies, and those companies are also project oriented. They're project development companies. They own and operate assets as well. And then we provide credit to projects and companies that are focused on assets. So we really are kind of at the leading edge of many of these conversations. Our investments span a very large swath of technologies. So we do power production and clean energy production. We have investments in transportation. We have investments in waste to value. We have investments in industrial decarbonization. We invest in a broad array of projects and opportunities.
I know that readers of InfraLogic are very familiar with Generate Capital. Your name comes up a lot in our publication, one of the most active firms in the renewables space, at least in the North American region. And Jonah, what's your role with the firm?
So I lead a couple parts of the firm. I lead external affairs, which is largely our regulatory and policy engagement with policymakers at all different levels, at the federal level, at the state level, and at the local level. I also lead our communications activities. We have a thought leadership platform called Generate Intelligence, where we help reflect on our experience investing and building these assets. I also lead our impact strategies. Our impact strategies are both how we judge our impact. We're a public benefit corporation, which means that we have a dual fiduciary obligation. One is to, of course, our shareholders, and that is a priority, as well as to the communities that we engage with, which is largely our commitments to sustainability, to the resource revolution, and as well as to, again, the health and wellness of the communities that we serve. And so I lead an effort to not only assess that, but also to evaluate how we can invest more effectively by increasing the impact that we have within these different verticals.
And Jonah, what is your background in this industry? How long have you been at Generate?
I've been here for just over a year. Before I was here, I did a short stint at BCG, where I was lucky enough to work with a bunch of colleagues on a number of different projects in this area. And then before that, I built Breakthrough Energy with Bill Gates. So I was employee zero and worked with Bill from the very beginning on the strategy, as well as on the raising of the funds, and then all of our work with policymakers, all of our work leading up to the IRA, all of our work in building a number of different programs. So not only our investment vehicles and policy vehicles, but our fellows program, as well as a program that we call Catalyst, which is a project finance vehicle.
Oh, that's very interesting. I never knew that, Jonah. And sounds like a really interesting career leading up to this point. And you'll have to get Bill to come on this podcast next. Put in a word for me.
Well, we'll see.
Well, as mentioned, Jonah, your focus has been, at least in large part, on following what's going on in the policy world. So I know it's only been less than 24 hours since a lot of these executive orders were issued, but we had a really active day yesterday. President Trump issued executive orders that paused disbursements coming from the Inflation Reduction Act, that paused offshore wind lease actions that also seemed to target onshore wind, and of course declared an energy emergency that seemed to kind of leave out renewables as a potential solution. So, Jonah, what do you make of the first 24 hours of the Trump presidency from an energy standpoint?
Well, it was certainly jam-packed, which I think people were somewhat caught off guard with, but was very consistent with what President Trump has been saying throughout the transition. And these moves were generally expected. And like pretty much every incoming administration, the first day, the first hours of the administration are often ways to demonstrate more the direction that the policymaking apparatus will go rather than really having like immediate impact. Some of the pieces of the IRA, most of those dollars have been distributed, so there isn't that much left in the agencies. But it's symbolic, and symbolism is important here. I mean, it's important to see how these agencies are likely to execute their authority under this new administration. And I think President Trump gave a clear sign again. I think that sign was consistent with what he's been saying throughout the campaign and certainly in the transition, even from a regulatory perspective. So even in the pieces of the policymaking apparatus where the president has the most authority, a lot of these things are processes, and those processes are long and they're drawn out and they're often fraught by decisions that were made by previous administrations and by limitations put on by Congress and by, you know, realities of the market. But again, I think that he made very clear that basically the promises that he made during the campaign are the promises he intends to keep as president.
It's interesting. I mean, you say this was expected, and I think some of it certainly was. But for example, I expected him to go after offshore wind. I think that as long as I've been talking to people in this sector about the prospect of a Republican administration, they've been saying that offshore wind was probably most at risk. But it seems like onshore wind is also in the crosshairs. Did that surprise you at all?
He's certainly been saying things about his feelings about onshore wind for a while, which are not positive. You know, the truth is that wind is a deeply powerful resource in the country, and it's largely powerful in red states. So Iowa gets a majority of its power from wind power. Other states along that kind of Midwest wind corridor are red states that derive a lot of power that is relatively affordable from wind. So, you know, those things, we'll see what the impact is. Again, I think that he's been very clear that wind is the renewable resource that he finds most kind of anathema to his priorities. And he made that clear once again yesterday. Now, again, it's important to note that executive orders have limited authority compared to actual regulatory processes that need to happen. And so we're going to see, again, as you said, Andrew, at the top of the podcast, like there was so much that happened yesterday. So digesting what it all means and what the impact is and what the executability of some of these things are, you know, those things are very difficult to judge at this moment, less than 24 hours after these things came down. But these processes are often much, much more involved to be able to, you know, revoke licenses on federal lands, to be able to halt development of projects that already have, you know, notices to proceed and that are already invested by both private and public players. I mean, these things are much more difficult than just, you know, a stroke of the pen in the Oval Office. But he's made clear what his targets are. And again, they don't seem terribly different than what we heard over the last number of months.
Well, that's very true. And obviously, there is a lot to digest. What do you make of his declaration of a national energy emergency? Now, in theory, I'd think that this could be a benefit for renewables if it expedited permitting. I know that's been something that's on the sector's mind for a while. But it seems like this national emergency declaration kind of leaves renewable sources of generation out of the conversation. What did you make of that?
I honestly don't know what it means yet. I'm not sure that any of us know what it means. I don't know that the administration knows exactly what it means. President Trump was very clear that he has an intention of reducing energy prices. And this was one of the steps. Again, a lot of these things are more politically directional than they are actually policy-oriented impact. And this may be one of those things. And you know, the truth is that the market is going to largely determine what resources are developed based on what the needs are of the various different grids that we have in the country and the demand that comes from both all of us as Americans, as well as the sectors that we support through all of the work that needs to get done in the country. And those are probably the dominant forces. And those forces tend to really like cheap power, and they really like cheap clean power. And so in that case, I think you have renewables standing on a pretty strong footing. I think that President Trump understands that there is a reliance already on the grid on some of these resources, and there is a lot more in the pipeline coming. And to the extent that we can withstand significant power demand over the next 5 to 10 years, certainly over the course of his administration, we need as many electrons on the grid as we can get. And frankly, wind and solar are doing a great job of providing those electrons. I mean, we saw for the first time that upstream oil and gas development fell below renewable development. I think it was sometime last year. The S&P just released a study on it. And you know, those are trends that are dominated by people who are actually putting money into projects. And that's really where we're going to see demand. I know that President Trump is not interested in raising power prices. And the truth is that if you curtail renewable development, if you curtail the ability of wind and solar to come on the grid, if you can curtail other types of clean energy opportunities, which the administration is very supportive of, like nuclear, geothermal, those sorts of things, power prices go up. There's less, there are fewer electrons, mean that power prices are going to go up. And that's not something that this administration is at all interested in.
And one theme we've been talking about for the last year at least is just the increasing need for power with the rise of artificial intelligence and the infrastructure, including data centers, that's needed to support that. If you forecast the next decade, it just seems like there's going to be the demand for the need for more energy than there has been in a very long time. It seems like it would be crazy to take any possible generation source off the table.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, the United States is out of practice with adding capacity to our grid. And we have an aging grid that makes it very difficult for us to do it. We have permitting obligations that are very, very difficult for developers and project builders to build quickly. And I think that this administration understands that and hopefully will relieve some of those pressures. But we're out of practice. We haven't done this for a long time. It's been, it's been a few decades since we've had meaningful load growth. It's not that we've never done it, but it's been a while. But the name of the game is increased electrons. The name of the game is increased cheap electrons. And renewables actually fulfill both of those opportunities, as well as, of course, preventing or at least delaying the worst impacts of climate change. And when you think about that, when you think about the impacts of climate change, so often they're talked about in the context of, these sort of political obligations on one side or the other. From an investment perspective and from a kind of real economy perspective, climate change is the most value destructive force we've ever seen. And investors don't like value destruction. They like value creation. And so the more that we can do to prevent that value destruction, the deep, deep tragedy that's happening in Southern California, that's continuing ongoing in Southern California, is just the latest example of that. And the more that we can preserve the value, the more that we can create value instead of destroy it, the more likely we are to be able to successfully compete in a global economy, the more that we are able to build the things that Americans rely on in order to live the lives that we all hope that we can lead. And in those cases, you take the politics out of it. And when you take the politics out of it, renewables actually fare quite well. Again, they're cheap, they're getting cheaper, and they're super powerful. And that, I think, is ultimately, economics often ultimately make the final decision. Politics maybe make the first one, but economics makes the last one.
That's definitely very interesting. Now, one of the factors, one of the big spurs to making renewables affordable in the last few years has been the Inflation Reduction Act. And even if you take a step back from the last 24 hours, that has been the fate of the Inflation Reduction Act, which was President Biden's climate legislation that created or extended all these incentives for renewable and other clean technologies. The fate of the Inflation Reduction Act has been, I'd say, the biggest focus for investors in this space when it comes to the potential of a Trump presidency. I think the consensus, the wide consensus, has been that it's unlikely that the IRA will be either repealed or really gutted, and that any changes would be kind of around the edges. But there's some uncertainty about that. I'm curious how your firm and how you're looking at that.
Yeah, listen, elections have consequences, and those consequences are often felt at the legislative level, and they will be felt this time. The rumors of the death of the IRA, as you suggested, are overblown, and the IRA has provided huge value to communities across the country. And those values are what often motivates political decision making, certainly at the House, in the House. And we have this strange sort of reverse dynamic that we normally do politically, where normally the Senate is so much closer with so much more power from an individual member than the House is. We're sort of reversed, or we are reversed in this Congress. And so what that means is that the local benefits of these projects and these programs are going to be much more determinative, I think, of how we move forward with policy. And in that case, I think that there certainly will be marginal changes to the IRA. In fact, I think if we had a continuation of the policies of the Biden administration, there would be an effort to go back and to try to adjust the policies of the IRA, obviously in a different direction than this administration would be. But we're constantly iterating on policy, and this is no exception. I think that what direction those adjustments move in have, again, a lot to do with where there's money deployed, people working, construction happening, power being provided to the grid. These things, these like actual tangible pieces of the puzzle, end up being the thing that's going to likely have members standing up for to defend particular provisions or deciding that they're not worth risking political capital on. If you look at that equation, then I think that there are parts of the IRA that look really good. I think that there are parts of the IRA that have delivered value to communities. I think that those things are already here, evidence of those things being supported by members. But, you know, this is going to be a messy process. It always is. It particularly is when you have close margins. So we're not sure exactly what it's going to look like. I think that there will be continued incentives to build out renewable energy in the country. I think those incentives hopefully are bankable for investors like us. But when we think about it at Generate, you know, we think about the fact that projects aren't in the United States. Projects are in particular communities in particular states that are in the United States. And we sort of think of it that way. So if we think that the economics of a particular project are going to work out, that's how we're evaluating that investment. And of course, the federal incentives help us in that case, but they're not the only things. And often the policy that's most relevant to the way that projects are being developed and the value that those projects are going to be able to bring back to communities are actually more localized policy. So whether that's state policy or local policy, and we continue to track that very, very deep. But I do think that there will continue to be federal incentives to build out these types of projects.
It's interesting. And I would also encourage listeners, if you haven't already, to go back and listen to my conversation with former FERC chairman Richard Glick, because we talked a lot about this, about the prospect of what will happen to the IRA. This was recorded in October before the election. But we talked about what would happen if Trump were to become president. And there's been a lot of talk about 18 Republican members of Congress signed a letter saying, don't repeal these incentives for clean energy. With normal political horse trading, there's no guarantee that all 18 of those members would stand firm. But you do have to think, given how narrow Republicans' advantage in the House is, that, you know, if even just two or three or a small amount stand in the way, that could make it impossible to have huge changes to the IRA. But I guess that's something we're going to see in the coming months. And I also think, in a way, just the uncertainty might have an impact on the industry itself.
Absolutely. Our CEO, Scott Jacobs, just wrote a sort of open letter to the community where he says that, you know, uncertainty and infrastructure investing are poor bedfellows. So uncertainty is always something that we are trying to resist against, especially when your goal is building assets that live for decades. So immediate political uncertainty sometimes can scuttle those efforts. And I think that we are living in a particularly uncertain environment, and I think that you have and will continue to see capital markets respond to that.
So we've talked a lot today about some of the threats and challenges to the industry in light of the new administration and the changes that are going to come with it. But are there also opportunities, and where are you looking for those opportunities, and where will the industry be looking for them?
First, from the types of assets that we tend to invest in, there are certainly opportunities. There are opportunities because customers are demanding cleaner and more reliable ways to power their businesses. So obviously AI, we've already talked about, and many of those hyperscalers continue to be committed to building out clean energy infrastructure alongside the AI infrastructure. And there's great opportunities, and those opportunities are across the board. There's technology development opportunities. There's opportunities for mixing technologies into multi-technology solutions to provide reliable and affordable and clean energy that powers the AI revolution. When you sort of take a step back and you think about where we are in the energy transition, where we are with climate and with the industrial transition, you know, there's a few things that we're desperately in need of. And those things seem to be things that this administration is quite supportive of. So the most capital intensive pieces of this are advancing and building out a new nuclear infrastructure, for example. Absolutely critical. It's critical no matter which direction you're taking it from. It's critical if you just want more electrons on the grid, because you have a very reliable and scalable way to be able to provide those electrons. It's incredibly important from a climate perspective. I mean, once you start getting to really high penetration of renewables, there are very few other types of resources that are able to be sited anywhere in the country that will provide non-intermittent electrons. And so you see some really interesting stuff happening from an innovation perspective. The administration seems to be supportive of hydrogen. And in some ways, one of the problems that was a struggle with the IRA and with the deep commitments to hydrogen was a real sort of tension between whether we're building a hydrogen economy or we're building a clean hydrogen economy. And those two things aren't the same. And this administration seems pretty intent on supporting things like hydrogen. And there's certainly an argument, I have to say, I fit into this category, where it's most important for us to first build a hydrogen economy, and then that economy is relatively easy to green. It's an identical molecule, no matter how you produce it. And we do not have that infrastructure now. We don't have hydrogen infrastructure for long-haul trucking, which could be a very interesting direction. We don't have hydrogen for energy production on a large scale, which could be interesting for the development of liquid fuels, which could be interesting. You know, for all of those things, hydrogen would be really interesting, as well as geothermal. I mean, you have a Secretary of Energy who was deeply, deeply involved in geothermal, was on the board of a geothermal company. It has obviously extensive experience with drilling, which is what you really need to do geothermal effectively. There's pieces of the future energy landscape that need major capital investment. And those things seem to be being supported by this administration. And I think that we should celebrate that. And hopefully if that's coupled with a move to make it easier to build, easier to connect, and easier to transport electrons, then hopefully that helps us, you know, not take a step back over the next 4 years, but take a step forward.
Are there any particular sectors that your firm is really going to pivot to or focus more on because of the change in administration?
You know, really what we're focused on is good investments. So we evaluate every investment separately, and every investment has its own set of dynamics. You know, there are certain things that might not make sense because incentives aren't there. And then there are certain things that will make more sense. But, you know, time will tell. We're not at a point where, you know, we're still investing. We're still moving forward. We're still building projects, and we've got no reason to stop at this point. A colleague of mine wrote a piece on Generate Intelligence at the end of the year, that right after the election, that basically said, you know, we look at the as a barometer,
where capital is flowing and how capital is flowing. And, you know, a number of these major Wall Street players, big banks and others, have been continuing to invest in this space over the course of the last year through the turmoil of an election cycle. You know, we're not betting that one or the other party was going to win the election. They knew that it was close. They knew that it was going to be down to the wire, and yet they still continue to invest. And I think that that's as indicative as anything of the fact that, you know, the effort to transition the economy, it's moving fast, and it's and there are winds behind it. There are winds in front of it, but there are winds behind it as well.
Well, it's only day two so far of the new administration. We already have plenty to talk about, and we could probably go on for a whole lot longer, but we'll definitely have a lot of conversations like this over the next 4 years, and I'll have to have you back on in a couple of years to see how a lot of this shook out. But Jonah, thank you so much for coming onto the pod.
Andrew, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
And if people want to learn a little bit more about your firm, where can they go?
They can go to generatecapital.com. And then there's a link there to Generate Intelligence, which really is our, like I said, our platform for discussing more about the energy and infrastructure transition and some insights from our expert team.
Well, thank you, Jonah. And thank you, listeners, for tuning into Crossroads. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast player, and please give us a 5-star rating so that others can find our podcast. Until next time, this has been Crossroads.